Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
Welcome to the Daily Jungle, another big show for you. Nick Saban is not playing in the Iron Bowl until next weekend, so the Nicktator tried on a new gig this week, stand-up comic. The Lakers and Sixers squared off in Staples last night. Joel, Hans, Embiid went legend. The process went 46, 15, 7, and 7 on the Lakers. And we finally heard from the three UCLA shoplifters yesterday. And if we never talk about this ever again, it will still be way too soon. Strong guest day today as well. Wichita State head basketball coach Greg Marshall, Fox Sports and SI's Bruce Feldman talking college football, and Sam Amick of USA Today was all over the NBA. All of that and Alvy's 4 days that were. Alvy, do what you do right now. I want to start with some college football. Normally, I would not start with an Alabama take, especially before a game like this, but Nick Saban went Nick Saban, and there's no way I don't start the program by acknowledging his act. I mean, it is that time of year, a week and a half out of the Iron Bowl, when Nick Saban typically is at his crankiest. This is when he gets truly irritable. Not because they're playing that noted football powerhouse Mercer this weekend, but because Bama is number one, and they've got a huge game against number six Auburn coming up. Their rivalry game, a game with national championship implications. So, Saban needs to make sure that he's extra grumpy to let everybody know how focused he is and to remind his guys how locked in they need to be. After all, it's almost 2 years to the day that he dropped his infamous bleep through a tin horn line.
You all don't remember the Georgia Southern game, do you? I don't think we had a guy on that field that didn't play in the NFL, and about four or five of them were first-round draft picks. And I think that team won a national championship, but I'm not sure. And they run through our like through a tin horn, man, and we could not stop them.
I mean, like, so grumpy, so intense, so Nick Saban. So, you can imagine my surprise when the internet exploded yesterday because Saban did not come into the presser and spit fire. Instead, he came in and he had jokes.
Not to offend anybody out there, but I just walked by some jeans, wore out jeans, holes in them, all cut up. I just remember when I was a kid in West Virginia, I was ashamed to go to school because my jeans were wore out, only because we didn't have any better. Now they buy them that way. I just can't figure out how did we get here.
Whoa. What the hell was that? Open mic night at the Chuckle Hut? When did his presser turn into the Laugh Factory? That dude's not exactly hilarious, but he sure is cracking himself up over it. I wasn't sure that he was going to even be able to finish his presser. But wait, there was more. Check out this blast about projectors.
You know, at this time of the season, I tell the players all the time, everybody's got film. Everybody's got a projector. Not a projector anymore. I guess it's a video machine or what do you guys all have out there? Computers or whatever it is you watch your stuff on. All right, so they got a book on you. So if you're not doing something correctly and you can't play something correctly, that's what you're going to see.
Woo! Damn, Nick! Stop it! And so this guy's on a roll at this point. And like some of the greatest comedians before him, he started doing some crowd work.
Analyzing this whole thing a little.
We got two more, Alex.
A lot more than I am, which I'm the coach, so I mean, you better be good, Alex, because I'm going to tell you what.
I'll do my best, Nick.
Is it best for last? Is that why you always get the last question?
Or? You'll have to ask your SID.
Damn, Alex, you just got roasted. Straight freaking roasted, Alex. Hey, Alex, tell Nick how his ass tastes.
How our play is that, mate?
Damn, I don't know what's crazier. Nick Saban cracking jokes or Twitter exploding because of those jokes. I love how people react to him using some tired, lame material and treating it like it's the funniest thing ever. Seriously, he's going with people are buying ripped jeans jokes. And the internet's freaking out like he's Chris Rock, Jimmy Kimmel, and Chris Farley all rolled into one. Seriously, it's a people are buying ripped jeans joke. That's not new. That's not creative. That's not funny. This guy's one step removed from take my wife, please. Did this guy just notice that people wear ripped jeans? People started wearing ripped jeans 30 freaking years ago. People wearing ripped jeans now are throwing back to when ripped jeans were a thing the first time. Motley Crue wore ripped jeans back in their heyday. And no, I don't want any jokes from Vince Neil about how he's still wearing ripped jeans now. Making a ripped jeans joke back in the mid-80s wasn't funny, and it's really not funny 3 decades later. What's next, Nick? Making jokes about airplane food? But seriously, folks, what's up with airplane food? Huh? I mean, it's on an airplane, but it's not even food. Am I right, people?
No.
As long as we're talking about airplanes, why don't they make the entire plane out of that black box? Right? Right? Yeah, how about this one? You drive on a parkway and you park in a driveway. What's up with that? Right? And how about a store that's open 24 hours a day and still has locks on the doors? Crazy, right? Greg Marshall is my guest. Listen, there's so many things I want to hit on with you, your program, your players. But before we get into any of that, how is life and what was your summer like?
Well, everything is really good, Jim. Everything is perfect, actually, with the exception of doing a little rehab on a shoulder surgery. I've been over 12 weeks now with torn rotator cuff and a shredded labrum. So that is not fun. I say avoid it if at all possible. Stay young.
I was going to say avoid the surgery or avoid ripping your arm out of its socket.
Both. Right. No, really. It's been a grind, man. I had to put the golf clubs up early this fall, and it's a shame because my wife has really started to play. So we've had a beautiful fall here, but I've been the caddy. I've been driving the golf cart.
I got you. So how far into the rehab are you? Are you almost done?
No, it's I'm over 12 weeks now post-surgery. The surgery was on the day of the eclipse, August the 21st. I was a little worried that the doctors and the nurses might leave my surgery and run out to check out the eclipse, but everything went pretty well, I think. The doctors are pleased, and the first 6 weeks you're in a sling, and then the painkillers wear off, or you kind of wean off those things, and it's a grind, man. It's a year to a year and a half, they say, before you're 100%. But 6 months, I should be very, very good. So, and right now it's hard to tell if you don't know that I had shoulder surgery.
Good. Greg Marshall joining us. All right, then. You beat College of Charleston 81-63 on Monday night. It's a game where you went up against Earl Grant, who was an assistant with you for 6 years. What's it like when you go up against one of your former assistants?
It's not fun. I did not enjoy that. I don't know why we played the game, honestly. I knew that they were going to be really good. They played without one of their better players, Jarrell Brantley. So that probably had a big effect on them. Earl Grant's one of the rising stars in this business. He's taken his fourth year. This is his best College of Charleston team. They won 25 last year, and they're picked to win the Colonial Athletic Conference this year. So I was very pleased to get out of there with an 18-point win. I studied quite a lot of film because I knew Earl and my former point guard, as well as my former graduate assistant, Matt Breyer, is on his staff. So they knew our stuff inside and out. We weren't going to trick them or fool them, so we just had to out-execute them.
Greg Marshall joining us. All right, so Monday's game was also your 353rd game as the head coach of Wichita State. That ties you with Ralph Miller for most in school history. It's a really big number, and it's one that you don't get to without a lot of success. So what does that number mean to you?
Well, it first of all, Ralph Miller is one of the all-time greats. I mean, the guy had Oregon State number one in the country back in the 80s, I think, and he was also good at Iowa after leaving Wichita State. He was the career leader in wins for a long time here at Wichita State. So it's awesome to be included in a sentence with Coach Miller, but it also just means that I'm getting really old, Jim.
Yeah, that not really old, just a little bit older. You want old, Greg. I'll tell you old. I interviewed Ralph Miller. I can remember when I got my career started that he was one of the guys that I put on my demo tape because I was so proud of talking to Ralph Miller and that he didn't chew me up and spit me out. So if you feel old, how about that? I interviewed that guy when I got into the business.
Ralph Miller was a dude. He was so tough.
He was.
And he started his career here at in high school in Wichita and ultimately had that program in the 60s as being one of the top programs in the country. And then he had a great career. Wherever he went, wins, plentiful wins soon followed.
Greg Marshall, my guest. All right, you and I are on the same page with him. Now, I wouldn't spend the whole interview talking about great moments from the past because you've got a loaded team that's got the potential for some great moments this season. But if you were to take me back to January of 2009 for just one moment, Creighton comes to town. You were 11-20 the season before. You had just dropped six games in a row, but you were playing in front of a blackout crowd, and you crushed Creighton on the glass, and you won that game. How big was that game for you and the program?
I think that was a turning point, Jim. I honestly believe we were not going anywhere in a hurry. And 0-6, we had just gone to Missouri State and gotten blown out. And I had met with my team for a long time in the locker room after the game, and just a real heart to heart, man. I let everybody talk, and I said, "What is going on? We should be better than this." And you know, there was a full litany of excuses and all that, but we come back, and a testament to this program and this fan base, because the next game being 0-6, and as you mentioned, only winning 11 games in our first season, I'm thinking they're getting ready to boo us and run us out of town on a rail. Instead, the place is packed to the gills. Everyone's wearing black. The Shockers respond, and we end up really doing great things the rest of the year. And finishing 17-17 and got a cup of coffee and I think the CBI that year. So that was a real turning point. And from that point forward, it's been NIT championship and six straight NCAA tournament appearances.
Yeah, I mean, how about that? If you and I were talking before that game in 09, and I told you in a couple of years you'd win the NIT, you'd go to the NCAA Final Four, that you'd be one of the best programs in the country year in and year out, what would you have said to me then?
Well, I would have said, you know, I want to see your world through your glasses, because they're very rose-colored glasses, man. You're feeling yourself. I just don't know how that's going to happen, but with diligence and strong work ethic and just getting the right type of guys in here that allow us to coach them, and they all have this talent that just needs to be uncovered and shined up, and then these guys become pros, they become graduates, and they become champions.
Greg Marshall joining us, Wichita State head coach. And I would imagine you would tell me that one of those guys is Landry Shamet. He dealt with that foot injury over the summer, but he had 17 in the opener, and then he had 10 against the College of Charleston. What do you make of how he's shown up in the first two games, and what kind of a year do you expect him to have?
Oh, it's really amazing because this kid's worked really hard. It's his second foot surgery. 2 years ago, he redshirted when Ron and Fred were seniors. He would have really been a big help for us to make a deeper run that year, but we elected to redshirt him. Last year, as a redshirt freshman, he burst onto the scene late in the season. It was tremendous in the NCAA tournament, especially against Kentucky. And then this year, he has to deal with it again, but he's rehabbed. The foot is healed. It's still a little bit of atrophy going on, and the ankle's kind of sore, but the actual screw of where it was put into the foot is 100% solid, and he's going to be a great player. Right now, he's not 100%. He's out there manning up and doing what he can, but he's going to be a pro eventually, and I don't know when that's going to be. It could be sooner rather than later. I don't know. But as long as we have him, it's just an honor to coach him because he does things the right way, and he's so easy and fun to coach.
Well, and on top of that, there's nothing wrong. He may have an issue with the foot still, or at least it might not be 100%, as you point out. Nothing wrong with this kid's heart. Nothing wrong with his head. Going into the tournament last year against Kentucky, he said, quote, "I'm tired of people thinking that we're some punks, like we can't play. We show up every day. Our record speaks for itself. We beat good teams. We compete. We do all this stuff, and we're just as good, if not better, than everybody we play against." Look, I would imagine you always want to have a chip on your shoulder, but at the same time, do you feel like you're done proving yourselves to everybody else, that you've done enough, that you no longer have to do that?
Nah, Jim, in this business, I think you have to prove yourself every time out. I really do. It's my college mentor, my coaching mentor, John Kress from the College of Charleston, had an expression, proud peacock one day, feather duster the next. And you're only as good as your last performance. And you've got to, whether you're College of Charleston, Wichita State, or Kansas, you've got to go out every night and perform and prove, you know, that you can do it at a very high level. And we're right up there with the Redwoods now. I mean, we're dealing with the big boys, and we're excited about this challenge we have upcoming in Maui, the Maui Invitational. And we have Cal on Monday. If we win or lose, we're going to play VCU or Marquette. And then you've got Michigan and Notre Dame and LSU and those type guys on the other side. So there should be some great basketball being played on the island. And hopefully you guys will get a chance to tune in.
You're not playing. You're not messing around. And I want to make the point that since that Final Four run, you've beaten Indiana, Kansas, Arizona in the tournament, all the bluest of the blue bloods. So it says a ton about the program. Listen, Greg, one last thought. It's been a tough offseason for the sport of college basketball overall. What's been your reaction as you've watched it all unfold and play out?
Well, you know, I've been in this business 33 years, Jim, so you know there's some stuff going on. You just don't know how or who or but now when the FBI gets involved and you know people could actually go to jail, it's a wake-up call. And I'm kind of glad. I don't want to see anyone go to jail. I really don't. I want them out of our game if that's what they're doing, but I want to see the playing field leveled. You know, it's almost like there should be a championship for those who do and a championship for those who don't. And it's just ridiculous that people are doing this they're trying to enrich themselves and make money off the backs of kids. And it's ugly. And I hate it. But you know what? There's bad people in every profession. And unfortunately, ours is public right now, but there's a ton of people that do it right. And, you know, every day they're improving the lives of the young people that they work with and coach. So just, I know there's a lot of negativity right now and with what's going on with the UCLA thing and whatnot, but honestly, our guys aren't perfect and I'm not perfect, but I tell you what, it'd be hard for you to find a group of young men, 17 young men with higher character as a group than what we have in that locker room.
Wichita State is 2-0. They're number 6 in the AP poll, and they're going up against Cal on Monday night. Their head coach, Greg Marshall, obviously always one of the first guys I run down at the start of the college basketball season. Greg, it's great to have you back on. Good luck rehabbing that wing, and I know you and I will do it again before the end of the season, and I will look forward to it.
Absolutely, and check us out, man. We're on 26 times nationally this year, so watch us.
I didn't think I'd be saying that a game between the 7-6 76ers and the 6-8 LA Lakers would be cancel your plans, call your friends, must-see TV. Don't get me wrong. I thought it would be good. I thought it would be fun. But I never, ever thought that it would be like what we saw last night, because there's no way I could have hoped or even dreamed for a game like the one we got. Sixers 115, Lakers 109. That game was so good. That was so good. That was so fun. Even Laker fans had to admit they enjoyed themselves. There was so much to talk about coming out of that game, but let me start with a moment for Laker fans. I know you're freaking out right now, full red light, alert, panic about Lonzo Ball and the fact that he went 1-for-9 from the field and that he looked timid and rattled at certain points and that he's off to not only a bad start, but a historically bad start. Like one of the worst starts ever in the history of the NBA for a guy shooting the basketball. And last night was the worst night he's had shooting the ball. And I know that all that hype about Kyle Kuzma, and by the way, he deserves every second of it. And then you have Brandon Ingram going for a career high 26-11. But you're all about Ball. And you're sweating that jumper right now. And I'm not saying that you shouldn't be. What I'm saying is you don't hit the panic button yet. I said that last week, and I'm going to say it again right now. He's only 15 games into his NBA career. Yes, 1-for-9 is terrible. but we're less than a week removed from him being the youngest player in NBA history with a triple-double. So pump the brakes on, he's a bust. He'll never be a star. Pump the brakes on all of that. The guy's not a bust. He's a rookie, 15 games in. Is this some kind of surprise that the jumper is a problem? Didn't we all know that when he came in? And that it would be a work in progress? The guy wasn't drafted for his jumper. He was drafted for his passing and his court vision. And so far, those things are working out pretty well. Give it some time. If he finds that jumper, and especially if he can hit it from deep, the panic disappears, everything will be fine, he can still be a star. It is way too early to throw dirt on this guy. Now, I know, when juxtaposed against Ben Simmons, it doesn't look good. It definitely does not look good. But then again, almost everybody is going to look bad against Ben Simmons. Ball can be very good. Simmons could be special. 15 games in is too early to call Ball a bust. But 14 games in is not too early to call Ben Simmons a star, because he is already. 18 points, 10 assists, 9 rebounds, and 5 steals last night. And the guy's 6'10". People thought Sixers coach Brett Brown was crazy when he talked about Simmons being a point guard at 6'10". But who thinks that's crazy now? Nobody. Not when the guy is a rebound shy of another triple-double. Not when he's nearly averaging a double-double. And not when he's dropping running hooks from the block on people. That's a dude that you plunk down money to watch any chance you get. And you do it right now. Have a conversation with your family and let them know from now on, Ben Simmons is more important to you than they are. And if you need to, show them Ben Simmons highlights and they'll understand. That's how special that guy is already. And even then, as great as he was to me, the biggest star of the night, obviously, was my man Joel Embiid. He was absolutely incredible. Incredible last night. In fact, Joel gets his own take. I'm not going to slam him in at the end of a take. So wait on that. Joel Hans Embiid was incredible. The Browns have a key matchup this weekend. I will get into that. The Chargers and Bills have a key matchup this weekend. I will cover that. Bob Griffin is trying to talk his way back into the NFL, and it's not working. Let's go to Woodland Hills. Arthur in the 818. Arthur, good morning. What's up?
Hey, what's going on, Rome? Huge Laker fan, obviously, here in the 818. Watched last night, man. Embiid and Simmons literally destroyed us. It's crazy. Embiid got some of the best post moves I've ever seen in a big man. He can shoot. He's got it all. Simmons on the other end, you know, basically had triple-double, 5 steals. Crazy. But, you know, our young core looks pretty good, too. I was surprised. You know, Kuzma is nice, like really good steal. And then Ingram balled out as well. So I'm good with our young core for now. Obviously, Lonzo's got to get it together. I mean, again, like you said, it's too early to call him a bust, but we'll see what we can do to fix the shot and whatnot. Otherwise, you know, like you said, he had a triple-double the other night, so he's good there. And then, yeah, just really good game to watch. It's fun to watch these two teams, two of the younger teams in the NBA. Hopefully the Sixers can, you know, remain healthy, and then down the line they can at least scare the Cavs a little bit in the playoffs. That'd be great. But it looks, so good. It looks good for these two franchises, I think, moving forward.
Arthur, nice, man. Bruce Feldman, as you reported earlier this week, Bruce, Butch Jones is out. I mean, ultimately, given how things started for him there and the fact that it looked like, yeah, things turned around, why do you think it didn't work out for Jones at Tennessee?
You know, it was one of those where I think he took over a big mess and he built it up. But ultimately, last year, the 2016 season was his chance, you know, to have the breakthrough. And it didn't happen. You know, they had some injuries. I just think that also some of the hires he'd made, especially on the offensive side of the ball, I think they just ultimately were pretty underwhelming. And then it seemed like kind of the harder Butch tried to kind of combat the narrative, I think the worse things kind of became. And it was almost like, you know, quicksand, where the more you fight it, the faster you go down. And I really think that's what was it. He came into this year. Everybody knew he was on the hot seat. He had a pretty young team, and they didn't respond too well to the pressure, and then things just seemed like they imploded from there.
Bruce Feldman joining us. Now, if we're talking about an opening at Tennessee, then that means, Bruce, that we're going to have to talk about John Gruden at some point, so we might as well get it over with right now. Based on what you've heard, How likely is it that he would take over in Knoxville? Is there any chance that could happen?
I mean, I think there's some volunteer boosters who are going to try to throw a lot of money at him. But, Jim, he's already making a ton of money, and he's also got a big endorsement deal, and he's never been a college head coach. So, you know, I'm wondering, does John Gruden, with the setup he has, A, does he want to get back into coaching, and B, does he want to get into coaching at this level where you have to wrestle with things like the 20-hour rule and different things where, you know, your off season is you're constantly basically checking your phone to deal with recruiting because some kid is in town and wants to take an unofficial visit, or somebody gets in trouble, or just a lot of the kind of annoying things that really don't have that much to do with actually coaching football as he knows it. And by the way, you know, he spent a lot of time with Butch Jones over the last few years, so I think he's pretty versed with not only the positives that go with coaching in Tennessee, but also probably some of the headaches, too.
Yeah, I just don't see it personally. I really don't. Now, what about Chip Kelly? His name has also come up. Could you see him returning to college football and doing it sooner as opposed to later?
I could definitely see that. You know, he had a ton of success. He was 46-7 in 4 years at Oregon. He was as innovative as any coach that we have seen in college football in a long time, not just with his offensive system, but a lot of the ways in terms of performance and training habits and the things he was able to help bring to Oregon. So I think there's a good chance he could come back. It's just where is going to be the ideal fit. I could see University of Florida being very interested in him. The question is going to be, you know, what's the fit for him? Just knowing him a little bit, I know that he's going to want to go somewhere where he feels, you know what, do my bosses treat people the right way? Do I feel like I can work with these guys? So there's got to be a support and commitment, but also I don't think he's going to want to go to somewhere where the head coach becomes some kind of celebrity where everybody's in your business and they're looking at every possible thing and there's a lot of other fishbowl aspect of it. Now, there's less of that aspect at Florida than there would be at Tennessee, but there's still quite a bit of it when you're the head coach of University of Florida in the SEC. If one of these other jobs in the Pac-12 opened up, I could see that. You know, I could certainly see him as a fit at a UCLA or Arizona State if they had a coaching change. But if they did decide to go to those directions, both of those schools would have to pay a lot of money to get out of their current head coaches. The one big positive beyond just Kelly's system and everything he would bring with him is you would probably get him at a cut rate because, remember, he's still getting paid a lot by the San Francisco 49ers.
Bruce Feldman joining us. All right, that's well said. So you've got Tennessee with an opening. You've got Florida with an opening. Then you've got Dan Mullen, who is an assistant at Florida, and he's accomplished some amazing things at Mississippi State. But could you see him leaving there for either Florida or Tennessee if they come for him?
I could. You know, as you mentioned, he was not only an assistant under Urban Meyer at Florida, but his old boss, the AD at Mississippi State, Scott Strickland, he's now the AD at Florida. They have a good relationship. The curious part of this thing with Dan Mullen is he's done a terrific job at Mississippi State. That's the hardest job in the SEC West resources-wise. They're now paying him $4.5 million a year. That's a lot of money. I think Tennessee, if Florida doesn't want him, I think Tennessee could pay him, you know, 6.5 to get him. He knows the SEC. He's a really good offensive coach. He's shown time and time again now he knows how to develop quarterbacks if you look at his track record. That's a big piece in this. The question is, yes, Tennessee is a better job, and certainly Florida is a much better job than what he has at Mississippi State. You have a better chance to compete for a national title there. But if you go 8-4 at Mississippi State, remember, in the last 5 years, he's averaged a little less than 8 wins a season. You do that in Starkville, Mississippi, they're going to love it. You do that in Knoxville for a couple of years in a row, and they're going to get tired of you. I mean, remember, Butch Jones had back-to-back 9-4 seasons in year 3 and year 4 coming into this year, and they couldn't wait to get rid of him.
You know, Bruce, you have all that, and then you've got a guy like Scott Frost, and his name is getting a lot of run based on what he's done at UCF, and because we have so many listeners in Nebraska, this comes up every single day on this show. In the event that Nebraska job does open up, how likely is it that Frost were to go there? And I hate to even say this, but because it seems like sacrilege, could he do better than Nebraska?
Well, I think that's in the question of how the people in Gainesville feel right now about him. I mean, he's had a ton of success. He took over a program that was basically just completely dormant. They were almost dead last in the country in offense, and now they're number one in the country in offense. Yeah, he is a Chip Kelly protege. He obviously has big Nebraska ties, having been a player there and being from there. What I wonder about is, and let's say, you know, he's still very well thought of and close to Tom Osborne, who's kind of the godfather of Nebraska football. If you look at that situation, does he say, you know what, I love Nebraska, yet at the same time, I don't know if I have as good a chance to compete for national titles there because it's harder to recruit and get the kind of speed I need for my system around Nebraska. Now, it's on the favorable side of the Big Ten and the Big Ten West, which is much easier. It's basically Wisconsin and nothing else going on there. But if you're at Florida, you're surrounded with all this talent. So I don't know. And same thing, Tennessee has a stronger recruiting base than Nebraska does. So it's just a matter of what he's going to want to do. I had heard that Nebraska was looking to make a big, big financial offer to him. But, you know, we're going to see how this is going to play out. They have a new AD, Bill Moose, who came from Washington State, had hired Mike Leach there as definitely an outside-the-box thinker. I think Scott Frost would be a home run hire if they could get him at Nebraska, but I think right now it's just a big if.
We're talking to Bruce Feldman for another moment or so. You mentioned the Big Ten, so let me ask you this. You were working the Michigan State-Ohio State game on Saturday. How do you explain the fact, Bruce, that the Buckeyes can beat Penn State one week, get smashed by Iowa the next, and then trounce Michigan State the week after that?
The best explanation I got, Jim, is that, you know, there are 19- and 20-year-old kids, and I think sometimes their focus is just not always where it needs to be because you got these emotional roller coasters. I think Iowa's really well coached. They have some talent. You know, Nate Stanley's a good young quarterback, but I think if you're – and they did, to their credit, they did do some things that Ohio State had not seen defensively, and they didn't adjust to them well. But I think more than that, I think the Buckeye players thought, hey, we got an unranked Iowa team coming in here. They looked and saw they were pretty underwhelming just in terms of what their product had been on the field this year. And there was a natural letdown coming from the rally against Penn State and Saquon Barkley. And all of a sudden they went in there, and I think they realized how physical Iowa can be, how well coached they are. And they realized they got athletes too. And before it was too late, they couldn't flip the switch. Whereas when they came in against Michigan State, it was a little bit the opposite. Michigan State was riding this emotional crest. You know, we had their game the week before against Penn State. It was a, you know, 7-hour game because of the weather delays. They went on the last second field goal. They're a young team. They went into Columbus. The Buckeyes punched him in the face a couple times, and Michigan State looked really young and in over their head, and that was that.
Let's talk UCLA basketball. Since I'm not in tomorrow, let's close the book on this. The three UCLA basketball players accused of shoplifting in China did arrive home on Tuesday, and nobody, believe me, nobody was happier or more pumped than I was. It was all I could do to keep from meeting them at the airport myself and driving them back to campus. Why? Because I thought yesterday would be the last time I would ever have to talk about them, and frankly, that was the best news I've heard in a long time. And just as I was about to start planning a parade through downtown LA to celebrate the fact that we would never have to talk about this whole thing ever again, they go and they have a press conference. Great. The three players threw on matching polo shirts and issued statements yesterday. Here is a sample, starting with Cody Riley.
I want to start off by saying how embarrassed and ashamed I am for disappointing my family, my teammates, my coaches, and the entire UCLA community. I can assure you that I will never do anything again to jeopardize UCLA's reputation and as my own.
All right, then it was LiAngelo Ball's turn.
Sorry for stealing from the stores in China. I didn't exercise my best judgment, and I was wrong for that. I apologize to my family, my coaches, my teammates, and UCLA for letting so many people down. I also apologize to the people of China for causing them so much trouble. I'm a young man, however, it's not an excuse for making a really stupid decision.
No, it's not, and I'm still waiting on an apology to me, LiAngelo. I apologize to Jim Rome for making him talk about this so much and having to watch it all. And then Jalen Hill, who also jumped in.
What I did was stupid. There's just no other way to put it. I hope that you can forgive my stupid, childish actions.
That's good. That's strong. In fact, they all were pretty good. They all were pretty strong. I especially like Jalen Hill, though, just saying, quote, what I did was stupid. There's no other way to put it. I hope you can forgive my stupid and childish actions. Listen, while they didn't take questions, I thought they came off as remorseful. Coached up? Maybe. Who knows? I'm not even sure it matters at this point. I'm not sure how many teenagers wouldn't need to be coached up before rolling out to a presser like that. The key thing was they didn't show up to that presser and blow it off. They said what they had to say. So the three players admitted to shoplifting from not one, but three stores. For some reason, some of you still don't know that detail of the story. It wasn't just that Louis Vuitton store. It was three stores. And because of that, they've been suspended indefinitely. What that means is no practicing, no traveling to games, and no wearing UCLA apparel during games. As for what indefinitely means, that's a different story. The question's always going to be, does the punishment fit the crime? And the answer is, in this case, it's pretty hard to say. I mean, what's appropriate punishment for shoplifting and for doing it where they did it? I mean, you get popped grabbing some stuff at a Walgreens in Westwood, you're probably held out during warm-ups. Maybe you miss a half. Maybe you miss a full game if you got something really nice. But you get nabbed trying to steal sunglasses and other items in China, it's going to be different, especially since it was an especially dumb and embarrassing incident for everybody. An international incident at that, the president got involved. But anybody who is suggesting that they should be kicked out of school or suspended for the entire season is overreacting and hot-taking and spewing lava. I mean, kicked out of school, suspended for the entire year? Why don't you just ban them from the sport of basketball for life? No playing basketball, no watching basketball, no thinking about basketball for the rest of their days on the planet. I'll tell you why I say that. The truth is, there are athletes who get arrested for DUI, as an example, who don't get kicked out of school or suspended for an entire season. And that's a hell of a lot worse than shoplifting. Shoplift and you embarrass yourself and your school. Drive under the influence and you put everybody at risk. So really, there's not a manual for this. You can't look up at the chart, you know, like that two-point conversion chart. You can't look up at the chart and say, okay, shoplifting, let's see, go to the line, three stores in China equals X number of games suspended. I would say this, a couple of games is not enough. An entire season is too much. Maybe somewhere in the neighborhood of 10 games, 12 games. Maybe it's at a conference, and that puts you at about 12 games. You know, maybe that's what it is, half the season. Do that, then move on. Because the fact is, and I mentioned this earlier, the real punishment is for everybody else who had to cover that story. If we never talk about this ever again, it will still be way too soon. In fact, if we're talking about this next week or next month, I'm going to start thinking that I'm getting punished worse than the players. And I didn't commit that crime. They did. Why am I paying the price for a crime that they committed? Hopefully this is it. So if you want to talk about it this hour. Because I don't want to talk about it again. Dear Rome, why would UCLA punish LiAngelo Ball? He leads the team in steals. Signed, Silly Nick Saban. Student PHX, unwore guys who make any kind of joke towards the golf cart drink girl. Damn, Steve, I didn't know you were so chivalrous. I'll stand up. All right, like I said, if you want to talk about this, do it right now. Because I'm not doing this next week. This story had best not jump the weekend. Let's go to Matt in L.A. Matt, good to have you back. What's up, Matt? How are you?
Snags, an honor as usual. Hey, real quick before the UCLA stuff. Memo to SoCal guys and guys all over the nation. If you're out of elementary school, don't wear Uggs under any circumstances out in public for the love of God. All right, man. So, Van Smack, hey, check it out. As far as this UCLA thing, I think, man, even Plaschke said, these guys actually do deserve to be gone the whole year, and this is why. About 6 years ago, a laptop came up missing, and it was tied back to some UCLA fellas, and they missed a year, and if I remember right, even one of them transferred. So there's already precedence on that. Now, as far as LiAngelo Ball, a.k.a. Jello Testicle, and the LV3, hey, man, they caused a damn international incident. If it was any of the clones kids or even Jake or, you know, they have better judgment, obviously. But if anybody tried that crap overseas, hey, Donald Trump ain't saying a damn thing. And they're in the clink for about 10 years, Romy. So
Matt, talk to me. Why is LiAngelo Ball, quote, Jello Testicle?
Oh, man. Come on, bro. He's sitting here disgracing the name of UCLA. And not only that, his nickname is Jello. He wants to be a big baller. Hey, well, what else is a ball? A testicle, especially when it messes up. So that's what you are, Jello. Jello testicle, unless you make up for it. You better stand up and do something, some community work. You better start mending fences all over communities because, hey, this was not cool. You put a black eye on America and one of the greatest institutions on the West Coast, the UCLA brand, which he has no business even repping. That's all I got, Romy.
Matt in L.A. Damn, what a takedown that was. You got that, quote, Jello testicle? Sam Amick is my guest. Sam, it's so good to have you back. How are you?
Romy, doing great. Thanks for having me, pal.
Always good to have you, Sam. Thanks. It's only November, Sam, and the belief had been that nothing big ever happens in the NBA in November, so I'm having a hard time wrapping my head around what happened last night at Staples. You covered this game for quite some time now. What do you make of what you saw from Joel Embiid last night?
I mean, it was unbelievable. The part that I'm having so much fun with, and I think a lot of NBA fans are too, is that, all right, we know the Warriors are dominant. We know that it's probably still going to be either them against the Cavs or the Celtics. And I feel like we can kind of compartmentalize, wait for that drama to unfold down the line. But right now you're getting this incredible wave of young talent that you get to enjoy night in, night out, and get a glimpse of who's coming up next. And last night, I mean, it was supposed to be the perfect storm where on both sides the young guys were killing it. Obviously, Lonzo struggled big time, but between Embiid and Simmons, and not only what they did last night, but what they've been doing on the regular, it's incredible. And then Joel last night, I mean, that stat line has never happened in the history of the NBA. You know, 46, 15, 7 assists, 7 blocks. It just has never happened. All the great players who have come through, it was something else to watch.
You know, it's never happened. And he did it in 34 minutes. And he did it when he right. said his conditioning's, quote, only at 69%. Now, one of the things you wrote about, Sam, after the game was, quote, if healthy, the 76ers big man, who missed 51 games as a rookie, has a chance to be one of the best players in league history. Look, the guy hasn't played 50 games yet, and you're not prone to hyperbole, and you don't throw around phrases like that very often. How special can he be?
He's incredible. It's because you see the skill set, and it's kind of like you alluded to. I mean, what I also wrote is that there's no qualifier more daunting than if healthy. And so that, I mean, 51 games missed as a rookie obviously doesn't even tell his story. You're talking about two seasons missed prior to that. He's already had so much time on the shelf. But when he's out there, and like you said a second ago too, when he's not even close to tip-top shape, his skill set in the post, his ability to shoot, his confidence, his swagger, his size, what he does on the defensive end too, it's unstoppable. I mean, Mark Jackson's calling the game last night. Another guy that, I mean, Mark's an entertaining commentator, but I don't hear him make grandiose statements too often either, and he's dropping the name of Hakeem the Dream to compare him to Joel last night, and it's because mainly I think the footwork. I mean, he's doing Euro steps around Andrew Bogut and just finding every which way to score. It's incredible stuff.
No, his footwork's amazing. I was shocked to see what he could do, and then the guy will step out and knock down a three-point shot. I mean, I've never seen a big man right. quite like that, and again, he hasn't played 50 games. Sam Amick is my guest. Now, Sam, you spent some time with Draymond Green recently, and you mentioned that you didn't have the Warriors on top of your power rankings. You know how competitive Draymond is. How did he react to that news?
It was kind of funny. I was almost one of those moments where, like, I thought the comfort level was so good that would roll right off his back, but I kind of forgot who I was talking to.
Right.
And his face scrunched up a little bit, and he just looked at me with that, basically that emoji of the sideways look.
Yeah.
That's what I got from Draymond. And so a little bit of regret sharing that with him, and I basically changed topics. All right, let's keep it moving anyways. Let's talk Cavs. You know, he's competitive, but he knows, man, they got off to it's not a slow start by other team standards, but, you know, a little bit of a slow start, and they are absolutely killing teams right now. And like I wrote in a different story this week, if you break down margin of victory, they're on pace to be, better in that category than they were when they won 73 games and more dominant than they were last season, too. I mean, this stuff lately has been crazy.
We're talking to Sam Amick. So they've been to 3 straight finals. It's a lot of games. It's a lot of minutes. How do they go about dealing with the fatigue?
It's a mental thing, and I think they're pretty, well-positioned to handle it based on the collection of their personalities. Nobody more so than Steve Kerr. I mean, if you talk about the absolute perfect job description to be the leader of a group of young guys and veterans who are, trying to – that's a good problem to have, right, to try to keep your head in the right place after going to the finals 3 straight times. So why not have the guy who's actually done it himself, Steve Kerr, been there, done that, can tell stories about those Bulls teams that he was on and help these guys through it. And, Draymond, one of the moments early on this season that I think is stuck in my head that set a tone for this topic is that when they beat the Clippers in L.A. and they had their way with them after that slow start, he really candidly admitted to the reporters afterwards that they just hadn't cared enough about defense. They hadn't cared enough and had that burning desire to go get a W and to walk out of the building as, the victors, so to speak. And that kind of finally happened against the Clippers and then kept happening from there. I think they had to kind of get reminded how much fun even regular season basketball can be. But in the context of that, you're talking about very specific, deliberate minute management and, calculated decisions about, guys and when they might take nights off and monitoring the workload in a way that, as he also talked about, LeBron and his Cavs are not able to right now.
Sam Amick joining us. In fact, that's where I was going next. Speaking of fatigue in minutes, LeBron leads the league in minutes with more than 38 per game. Draymond said that should be a cause for concern for Cavalier fans and the Cavs themselves. Is that Draymond trolling, or does he have a point there?
No, he's got a point. I'm kind of – that friendship he has with LeBron I find so interesting because I think mainstream America that barely pays attention to basketball, if you ask them what they know about those two guys, all they're going to think about is that incident in the finals a couple of years ago when Draymond got suspended, and you would kind of have them framed as mortal enemies. These guys are friends, and these guys have business partnerships together with the Uninterrupted company that they do media stuff with, and so that was essentially me picking his brain because I know he's not afraid to give his opinion and his perspective on other teams. And I think he's got a point. And actually, LeBron was asked about it last night from Joe Varden of Cleveland.com. One of the beat writers for the Cavs had kind of taken what Draymond said. To Joe's credit, he didn't just take the headline. He shared everything with LeBron. And LeBron said, absolutely, Draymond's right. And he said, the problem is we just haven't had that luxury. We're going to try to get that done down the road. But, there's bigger priorities right now than keeping his minutes down.
Well, and they've got to get Isaiah Thomas back. Now, you spoke to him recently. What is your sense as to where he is mentally right now when it comes to dealing with his rehab process?
He's in a good place. I'm going to have a lot more on that front in the next couple of days. Probably the first story was kind of just capturing the fact that he's doing this docu-series that he worked on for a long time, and they're going to put it on Players Tribune. It started today, called Book of Isaiah 2. But his mindset is he's getting close and he's getting fired up. And, anybody who covers the league, follows the league, his story. The guy's got this incredible underdog tale, pick 60th in the draft. Everybody always tells him he can't do it. He finds a way to do it. So he feels like this is going to be the latest example of that he's going to come in, find a way to click with this group and do some great things. If I had to handicap the timeline, on the one hand, the Cavs, I've been real sensitive, not wanting to put a timeline on it whatsoever. But January 1st kind of started circulating as an unofficial target date of sorts. And I think if things continue to go really well, I would not be surprised if we didn't see Isaiah before then. I know he's hoping to get back, even in this calendar year.
And that should be a very different team when he does. Before you go, let me ask you, Sam, about the Celtics. They've won without Al Horford for a few games. Kyrie Irving's been a bit banged up, and they don't have Gordon Hayward, of course. What do you make of what Brad Stevens has done with that Boston team?
Incredible stuff. I mean, every time I wonder if we are overhyping Brad Stevens, in the media circles, I go and I read everything from the Boston media and I listen to the interviews. I actually just heard one of the best out there, Ace Rod Blakely, talking about how in that Celtics locker room, from top to bottom, that these guys, if you ask them to go build a statue of Brad Stevens, they might go do it. They are that loyal to him. They are that high on him. They truly believe that he is the X factor and the key to them being put in a position to succeed on both ends of the floor. That's what a coach is supposed to do. He's no nonsense to the point where, they hear what they need to hear, but he's not one of those guys that's going to drive you into the ground. It's magical stuff so far, what they're doing, especially defensively. I mean, they're not only the best defense in the league with a guy in Kyrie who is widely considered to be a bad defender, they are, far and away the best defense in the league. So it's crazy stuff.
Yeah, I'm so glad you said that, because I was going to say, and set me straight if I need to be set straight, but I actually think that I see Kyrie playing some defense. Is that me, yeah, or is he actually playing defense?
No, it's not. I mean, it's a real thing. I heard, and again, I'm piggybacking on Sherrod, but he was talking about the fact that Kyrie has become functional, and he's driving guys the right way, and he's staying within the team concept. And you see that every once in a while. I mean, honestly, Jim, like, the longer I cover the league, I'm starting to, that old coaching adage about how the one and the five spot, point guard and center, are the end-all, be-all of defense. I don't believe that as much as I used to. It's certainly a positive if you've got a Chris Paul up top and a DeAndre Jordan down low, so to speak, or somebody like that, or Rudy Gobert. But, if you have a certain system and you have five guys on a string and you have guys who are dedicated, and even what Draymond said a couple weeks ago about the passion and the dedication to rotating, to helping the helper, all of those things, those are the most important things of a great defense.
Sam Amick, my guest, also the host of the NBA A to Z podcast. Sam, what are you doing on the next episode of your podcast?
We shall see. I think I might share some of that Isaiah audio from that chat. We got into kind of everything, about a 15-20 minute conversation, and then probably just go around the league. I mean, I got a bunch of OKC material that I still haven't turned, trying to analyze how those guys continue to try to come together, and they've had some good games lately. So just kind of making the rounds. Should be fun.
Hey, Sam, it's so interesting, right? The way content is, the way we all try to push our content out on our various platforms. How do you approach the podcast? Because you have to do your work for USA Today. I mean, do you try and keep some content? Does it make more sense to live on your podcast than it would with USA Today? Or how do you approach it?
It's a great question. And, I mean, there's not an exact formula. Week by week, we essentially try to have the smartest strategy. I mean, this is a good example with the Isaiah situation where, right now I'm holding back a lot of content to simply kind of check the box of discussing the project he's doing. And then even if we publish a lot of the interview in written form on the website, the reality is I try to put myself in the shoes of the fan and the reader. Everybody is so busy that you might have missed it on the website. So maybe you catch it on the podcast. I used to be against having any kind of duplication, and now I've changed in that regard, where I kind of feel like we try to get as much mileage out of these different interviews and conversations that we have as possible, and just try to paint that picture of these players in the NBA.
Welcome to the jungle. A very good Monday to you. My name is Jim Rome. Okay, hope you had a great weekend. I had a run to New York. I am back in SoCal. Had a great weekend there. Good to be home. I want to start with the Cowboys. I could have started any number of different places in the NFL. But let's start with the Cowboys.
How about them Cowboys?
Because Jerry Jones had himself a couple of days, didn't he?
Yeah!
Adrian Claiborne strips Dak Prescott.
Threatening to sue his fellow owners, losing Ezekiel Elliott, and then getting hammered 27-7 by the Atlanta Falcons.
Fail clown.
Sue his fellow owners. After that game, Jerry had to be thinking about suing his offensive line. Jason Locken for joining us.
Roger Goodell's got 28 owners in his corner. What the hell is Jerry Jones going to do to mend fences? There's people in the league saying, hey, Stephen Jones, step up.
Step your game.
Your dad is taking this too far.
Recovered by New England. Oh, man, you talk about sucking the life.
There is not a more disappointing team in the NFL right now than the Denver Broncos. Jonathan I'd Jones, say the Giants, but again, the even they beat Denver.
Better phone, better takes, Josh in Detroit.
Ah. Better phone, same terrible takes, Josh in Detroit.
He's also fat. But he's also ripped.
Theo Riddick is my guest. Can you be fat and ripped?
No.
There's no way. There's no way he can be shredded in fact. There's no way. There's just no way.
Just don't want to make a mistake. No, there's a one drive
in there. So it's picked off. Last night, incredibly, had me longing for the good old days. And Kiko Alonso was decapitating Joe Flacco.
You decapitated
him. And Ndamukong Suh was trying to strangle Ryan Mallett. Brad Keselowski is my guest. When you look back on the feeling of winning that title, what comes to mind first?
A lot of beer. Drink a lot of beer
good.
That night.
I like it.
My memory's not that great, Jim.
Good.
But it was a lot of fun.
10-5 touchdown, Robert Woods!
Rams wide receiver Robert Woods is my guest. Did you think this thing could turn as quickly as it has?
Not like this. I think we're really rolling. Jared has been balling, playing really, really well, leading this team. You know, we saw the potential, but right now it's happening. It's rocking for us.
Let's see. Matt B. Matt B likes horseplay. Let me think.
It doesn't make any sense.
Oh, a hit. Wait, that woman. Give me the woman. Give me the woman
again. It doesn't make any sense.
It's Sarah Jessica Parker. Holy crap. Matt B is Matthew Broderick, and that's why he loves horseplay. Bryce Love joining us.
Oh, I appreciate it. Thank you for having me, and you know we appreciate that Jungle Karma.
Come on, Ted. Think that I would get on nationally syndicated radio with several thousand radio stations and 8 billion listeners and try to convince you this was, quote, exclusive audio from the Josh Beckett incident? How do you follow the show? How do you not know that that was a joke?
What's going on?
We're joined right now by Paul Kariya.
Thanks, Jim, and I want to say thank you very much for all the support you've given me as a hockey player all through my career. I really appreciate it, Jim.
Hell, does anybody even know how they started the season and whether or not they won that game that they went to China to play? I don't know. And the reason I don't know is because of all this Louis Vuitton bull. I hope I never hear about this ever again. That was a tongue I slapped on my mic.
Every single medal they ever won in every single Olympic Games across every single sport, they essentially had cheated and doped.
Liz in Fall City.
Blake Shelton awarded the sexiest man alive. Were they drunk? Guy is a fat Ewok disguised as a country hick who allegedly has talent.
Email.
There's a reason he's on The Voice and not The Looks.
Blake Shelton is not the sexiest man alive, and he is just fat.
Email.
If I have to ruin Blake Shelton or the Jags, I'll take one for the team.
Take him home for the night and ruin
like
him.
He's a slump buster.
I'm out.
Telvin Smith is my guest.
You got to make sure you have your plan B in case your plan A don't work. And my response was,
I only focused on plan A because plan B was a distraction from plan A. This is it, and that's what you see.
Kyle, good to have you on. How are you?
Hey, I'm great. Drew, man.
I didn't know when you were going live, and I was like, holy crap, I am not ready. It was like a bucket list thing for me to do my whole life since like middle school.
Lays it in. Sidesteps.
Joel, Hans, Bobby, Embiid. I'll say it again. I could not love this guy anymore unless he were my own son.
Wore out jeans, holes in them, all cut up. I was ashamed to go to school because my jeans were wore out, only because we didn't have any better.
Damn, Nick. Stop it. Greg Marshall is my guest.
To be honest, I'm kind of glad. I don't want to see anyone go to jail. I really don't. I want them out of our game if that's what they're doing.
Don Maker celebrating a victory by playing a game of duck, duck, goose at midcourt without their buttholes ever leaving the floor.
Butthole.
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 Don't wear Uggs.
I actually think that I see Kyrie playing some defense.
What?
No, it's not. I mean, it's a real thing.
Any more fire from you and you'll burn this house to the ground.
Check us out, man. We're on 26 times nationally.
Package Pirates.
Scott Tolzien.
Maybe Andy Dalton.
The old fella.
Blake Shelton is fat.
Besides my best judgment.
Jello testicle.
F-U-2.
Good night now!
As always, thank you so much for listening, and thank you for the great reaction to the Brian Fogel episode of the Jim Rome Podcast. If you have not heard that, go check it out. I am off tomorrow. Have a great weekend. I will see you right back here on Monday.
Emails.
This email reads, Ahoy, Jimmy. Arrgh, matey. Me hears you've been spouting at the mouth about me and my fellas. Shiver me timbers, Jimmy. You best stop minding your words. Even with me dandy sunken patch, I can still see making ye walk the plank if yous keep insisting on calling me and my fella scumbags. Scurvily yours, Package Pirates. Wore hot lassies and vitamin C, Den Lusks. I did the best I could with that.